Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Make sure to stay in touch with us. Give us a call either on 07491 25,000. We've got loads of conversation and some great live music for you coming up between now and 12 noon. So please do stay tuned. Just to remind you, if you want to watch the show, you can hop onto YouTube and watch us on Highland Radio Ireland. We're on X and on the Facebook platforms. I'll be chatting to Mary Hart very shortly. She's Chair for Folk Community in Action, because we are broadcasting live from the smallest cathedral city in Europe. It is the beautiful Raphoe, and we are broadcasting more specifically from the Vault House here, right on the Diamond. And as I say, loads of conversation about Raphoe on the way. But to some of your comments that have been coming in over the course of the first hour, a commentator who said slap on tax must be working for the government. Why punish people who are probably paying a mortgage because they won't make it easier to build houses? Local county councils should be given money to build social houses rather than waiting for the developers to come on board. Local people would have jobs then too. But you'll hear the likes of Micheál Martin being critical of local authorities for not doing enough in terms of house delivery. A caller says it's about paying their mortgages. Greg, have you looked at what Meadow Bank is charging for rent? Both short and long term mortgages are well paid. This overvaluing on rent has been happening for nigh two decades now. If your mortgage isn't paid when you're charging 400% your mortgage repayment, you shouldn't have property in the first place. I'm just saying, and it was a throwaway remark, that some people, and I've had conversations with them, are of the view that all of the rent, effectively, whomever's in their house should be effectively buying their house for them. Now, obviously, a service is being provided. That's not a hill I'm prepared to die on. It just feels to me like that's just maybe part of the societal situation we're in. Hi, Greg. I've at least two relatives that have given up on long-term rental after having terrible trouble trying to remove them from the property for not paying the rent. It seems you cannot evict someone that has nowhere else to go. Another, hi, Greg. Could you ask Dakota, would there be any chance we could get 20 minutes free parking in Ballybofey, the same as Letterkenny? If not, is this not discrimination on the people of Ballybofey? Well, we've debated that before in the past, you know, and the general consensus was is that businesses weren't necessarily in favour of it. I seem to recall that being related to me by one of the councillors in that area. But let's have that conversation now. Would you be in favour of a term of free parking in Ballybofey Stranorlar? What about restricting people who don't have a local connection from buying a house, similar to the Section 47 Planning Act? This could cut out absentee landlords. But, I mean, obviously that wouldn't be retrospective necessarily either, would it? A caller says we can blame Ukraine, but we can't blame Ukraine, but we already have a massive housing issue with defective blocks. This is the one reason that landlords should be forced to rent out short 2-year terms to help these families. Another here, Greg, I have a wee boy with autism who is a flight risk. So even though he's too big for a car seat, I do look for family space. My wee boy has a hidden additional need, so people need to be mindful that could also be the case. Well, I'll be honest with you, I'm not incredibly judgmental one way or other, but if I saw you getting out of one of these spaces with your sons, I'm not going to look at you and go, you know, this, that and then. I think I would, and I hope most people would, have an understanding that it's done through necessity. The councillors are just speaking spin, but they've no solutions. If they ban me from renting my house for 10 weeks in the summer, I will leave it lying empty rather than rent full time. Yeah, there you go. That's what some people will do. That's what Margaret talked of there. Another caller says the primary constraint remains the lack of suitably zoned land. Unless more viable land is brought forward for residential development, the delivery of new housing will remain severely limited. Local authorities must take proactive steps to rezone appropriate lands to meet current and future demands. That comes in from Dara there. And as well as that too, our infrastructure, power, but particularly water, a major issue. How could you, in any good conscience, connect a single property to the Milford Water when restrictions are in place and will continue in place for quite some time to come? Greg, I own my house. It took me 25 years to pay for it. No one will take that from me. I would burn it first so they can think again. It's my house and I'll do what I want with my house. It is mine. A lot of people very passionate about this issue. Tell Dakota I'm not downsizing to compensate for bad government policies. Why can't property be my pension plan? I'm not a banking whiz or stock exchange player like many politicians. Another here. So basically, the government caused a housing crisis, then invited tens of thousands of immigrants into the country, and now suggests that property owners be penalised for their failures. That's just typical Irish politicians, says that listener. Another one. I can't believe what I'm hearing. Elevate all situations, evaluate all situations in regards to housing, private properties, private property. Can you imagine your home on your own land being taken off you because of government communist policy? If they push ahead with the compulsory purchase bill rather than a referendum, which they know they will lose, then the precedent has been set and your private property will be no longer secure. Can I just say the government never proposed that? That was a policy that was misattributed to government. That was a people before proper, a people before profit. They offered that as some sort of a solution to it. It was shot down. No one liked it. And the government certainly weren't backing that. So it's not theirs, that plan. Morning, Greg. Just as you're talking about housing, do you know if you're buying your first home and because it's not a new build, you're both, you are both entitled to first-time buyer scheme? Also, if you're buying a house and it's over a certain amount, you're not entitled to Help to Buy scheme. I was sorry I missed your show when you had Housing Minister on, wondering what his take is on this. If it's your first home, new or old, you should get help. Also, shouldn't they put a ceiling on price of a house because prices are so high? Shouldn't they not put it on? I think that's a double negative. Should they not put it on? A certain community are being given the blame for attacks on Indians instead of the scum the parents of this country are raising. Oh, it's not my boy's fault. He fell in with a bad crowd. Well, guess what, folks? The buck's got to stop somewhere. Start with your own house. Hi, Greg. Just wondering, what's your thoughts on landlords refusing to rent to locals in the local towns because they are opting to rent to immigrants because they get three times as much rent from the government? What is the situation there? Is this off the back of... I know one lady posted in Dublin. She said that she had a house to rent and she was going to rent out, I think for about €1,000 to a local family, and they were applying for HAP, and she says she got a call from DCC to say, well, hold on a second, we'll give you $4,000 a month if you rent it to a refugee family. Now, I've only seen this one post, but it's amazing how one post, be it true or not, I'm not sure whether it is or not, ends up getting quoted and requoted and becomes as if that is the policy all over the shop. Maybe it is, I don't know. 086 60 25,000. Good luck if you're playing the bingo today. Here are the numbers.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. Every Friday this month we are out and about around our beautiful region. Today we are in the smallest cathedral city in Europe. It is the wonderful Rafo, and it is dripping in heritage and history. Mary Hart is Chair for Rafo Community in Action. And Mary, thank you for having us, by the way.
Very welcome to Rafo. I'm glad you've finally made it.
Yes, indeed. We have, obviously, a lot of history and heritage right across the county, but it feels present here, as it does in Remelton. And there's a few other places, if you know what I mean, whereby it still feels historic, it still feels current, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I would dare to say that Rafo probably is one of the earliest settlements in Ireland. Where I'm looking, you can't see, but behind on the window, there's a Beltney Stone head, which brings us out to the Beltney Stone Circle, which is at least 4,000 years old. There's a stone lintel beside the Beltney Stone head sitting there, which is one of the earliest stones of a monastery in Rafo. So we are sitting on the southern side of Mungarrie Hill. That's Rafo, second highest town in Ireland, and that tells you, so we're on a hill, and on the other hill looking down to the south is the Beltney Stone Circle. So when the pagans lived for thousands of years, that was where their centre of ritual beliefs were practiced. We don't know where they lived. We could have lived
and it's
here.
A lot of it's speculative, because why have 64 stones be arranged in a circle? We can only really presume, can't we?
No. We know why stone circles exist. They were like a calendar, of seasonal calendar, mm-hmm. Among other things. So the farmers, the earliest farmers, were the people who settled. Before that, they were hunter-gatherers, and then earliest farmers then settled and began growing their own crops and seeds and manoeuvring the land. So the stone circle, at least that's what it was. It was a ritual site, but it was also a farming calendar for the ancient people to tell them when to sow their seeds and when to gather the crops, when the sun rose, what time of year, all of that. But the historical connection with Rafo is that around about 800, Christians came along, this new religion, so this began to evolve here. So the people living here were still out at Beltane, and the new monks that were coming along to practice this new religion or to spread. So the Columbkill monks, there's no evidence that Columbkill actually set up a monastery here, but there was certainly one of his monasteries set up here. And then from that, the monastery of Yunnan evolved here. So that's why Rafo is Rathbach. So it's the fort of the huts. So that would have been the huts of the monks. We have now found evidence recently. We had an excellent seminar about 2 weeks ago, thanks to Creative Ireland and Donegal County Council. Dr. Brian Lacey and myself, both of us historians and both of us archaeologists. So we went in a search to see, can we find evidence of this monastery? And we've asked the local people to involve themselves in that as well, because the town is full of old walls everywhere. And there was an assumption that those old walls were built when the castle was built, which was the 1600s, but actually they probably go right back to the monastery. So we definitely know that the Cathedral of Rafo, St. Eunan's Cathedral, which is now the Church of Ireland Cathedral, that is definitely the site of the earliest church, the earliest monastery. And we believe that we've found the Bath of St. Eunan's, which was a pilgrim bath where pilgrims from all over Europe came along to dip their feet, probably, into this bath. And Brian Lacey and myself have managed to find it. And that is new. And
Knowledge is evolving all the time.
Of course.
Which is quite exciting. Yeah. Do we know why Rafo became or is such a religious centre? What is it about here that has drawn so much over the centuries?
Well, it's no surprise that most of Donegal is the Diocese of Rafo, both Catholic and Church of Ireland, the Diocese of Derry and Rafo, and then the Catholic Diocese of Rafo. That is because of the Beltane Stone Circle being such a powerful, for thousands of years, ritual site. So when the Christians came along, they had to sort of set up right beside or camp nearby to woo the people away. And this was a very strong centre of Christian learning, of Christian beliefs. And that, for that reason, it evolved into an important centre, became from a monastery, it became a Roman Catholic diocese. That was why it was decreed a cathedral by the Pope in about the 12th century. So that then evolved, and the church was, when the plantation happened, the church was in a ruinous state. So the new established Church of Ireland then restored the church, and that's why it is now a Church of Ireland cathedral, which has happened to many of the older churches in Ireland. So for that, that's why it's so important. It was a very important centre of Christianity and centre of learning. And it has held its own down the years. I mean, I grew up 4 or 5 doors down the street here. The Red Door and the Diamond was where that was our playground. And we went to what we called the Rocks, probably some kind of an ancient site that we don't know, that was maybe destroyed. During the Troubles in Northern Ireland, you know, a lot of the border towns just faded away, lost their importance. But Rafo hasn't. And it's, I think, possibly because of its structure. It's a very nicely laid out town. But it also has a road coming in all directions. You know, you come straight over from Letterkenny over the mountain, you come through from Sligo to Derry, and then you can go if you need to go across Castlefin. So we're right there in the centre.
And it's an amazing offering that you have, right? Because, I mean, obviously we could talk of Sleaf League, you can talk about Letterkenny, you can talk about, you know, Dannings, or you can talk about Malinhead and everything it has to offer. Obviously we're landlocked here, but it has a great deal to offer in terms of history, heritage, beauty, Cadí mille fáilte and all that type of stuff. Where are we at, do you think, in terms of realising the full potential of that, sort of like in east of the county at Wild Way, so to speak?
I was involved with a group that has since, because of COVID, just disappeared again, which was Donegal East Tourism. And what we were trying to assert was that all of Donegal has some way connections to the Wild Atlantic Way, but the east of Donegal, East Donegal, it's borderlocked, but it's not entirely landlocked. So the source of the Foyle is kind of just over the hill there, and the source of the Swilly is just over the hill there. So we're not too far away from those Atlantic sources. And I I think for Ruffo, we are definitely on the cusp. We have to find something that will attract people to come in, and it is our history.
But that
and
is
heritage.
It, you see. I mean, like, if I go somewhere foreign, there's no point me seeing a Tesco there because there's Tesco's here. There's no point me seeing a Zara there because there's a Zara here. You know, there's no point me getting in a jet ski there because there's a jet ski here. The thing that I connect to in a place and the thing that makes me feel like I feel part of it or a need to return is the history and the heritage. And that is, I think, really critical for returning visitors, but also tourism growth, because that's you want to go to Ireland and you don't want necessarily the West, if you know what I mean, civilization. You want the raw culture, the scenery, the music, the food.
Yeah, we're one of the things, and I have an Airbnb cottage on the house or beside the house where I live. It's an old farm and an old farm building. And I have, you know, for 14 thereabouts years been having visitors in the summer only from mostly America, from all over America, but from all over the world. And they've come here because Ruffo is central to exploring the rest of Donegal, because you're 40 minutes from Rathmullen, you're 40 minutes from Buncrana, you're 40 minutes from Rosnaula, you know, you're 40 minutes or 30 minutes from Derry. So you're very central for that. That's one big selling point. But the biggest selling point is for us to develop our heritage, heritage centre, which is what I think the Vault House could develop. You can do a walking tour of Ruffo. You can go to Beltney Stone Circle. We do know that at least 10,000 footfall was there before COVID. I would hazard a guess that it is about double that since COVID, because people were walking locally, and it became, and it is every day, there's people going there. We just need to stop people in Ruffo, and we're now working with Donegal County Council.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. I think with the best will in the world, you can sort of lay the foundations as local campaigners, local groups, but you do need the backing of the institutions, be it Fáilte Ireland, the council, whatever it might be, that say, right, you know what, we see what you've done, there's huge potential there, we're going to back you on that.
Absolutely, and I do feel, there isn't any tourism office in East Donegal
at
all.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? It's
absolutely, and when we had East Donegal Tourism, which was a voluntary group, we were told by the council there's no money to fund a person, but I would like to think that Ruffo and the Vault House here would be the ideal location for an East Donegal Tourism Centre and office. And at the minute we are working, there's a new Heritage Towns Initiative in operation in Ruffo. It hasn't actually begun yet. So we're asking, you know, all the local people to say what they would like to see happen in Ruffo in terms of developing it as a historic town and as a heritage go-to place.
But even in the first instance, without all the hoops, just plug it a bit. You know, not you guys. Yeah. I'm on about the you know, let's say there is an alternative offering.
Yeah,
you know, the coast's not for everyone, albeit I know you argue we're very close to waterways here. The Vault here, the Vault House, officially opened in the earlier this century by then President Mary McLeish, but clearly, obviously, this place dripping with history, it predates that. So what is the brief history of this building and its significance?
Well, it was built in the 1700s for the widows of Church of Ireland ministers, and, you know, it was a very perceptive move because, you know, young men would pass away and their wives and children were destitute if they were wives and children of a Church of Ireland minister. So they were given, there are three floors that have identical rooms. So this was where they came to. I remember growing up, Mrs. Cave, Vera Cave, lived here and her children. And she's only recently passed away. The house then was owned by the Church of Ireland down the years, but of course it no longer served that purpose after, I think Mrs. Cape may have been the last. I think she was the last person to stay here. It then fell into disrepair, and that's why the community group then in 1998 was set up to purchase the building, because it had to be sold to a community group. It
now, the ground floor, obviously beautifully retained, but also modern, very sensitively modern. Is it the same of all the floors?
Identical. All floors are identical. And I suppose our biggest problem is trying to fill...
So it's been saved in its entirety then, effectively.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean when I came in here to look at it in 1998 or thereabouts, the birds were flying around inside, you know.
Wow.
So thanks to the International Fund for Ireland at the time, and also Donegal County Council and the Irish government, it was purchased for a nominal amount. I think it maybe have been 70,000 at the time, thereabouts. And then it was restored from those funds, and it is now under the guardianship of a board of directors, of which I'm the chairperson. So there's a 10 directors, and it's our responsibility to make sure the books are balanced and that there's lots of activities going on here. But we could do with more people. We could do with more young people getting involved. We could do with more people with ideas to let themselves be known. Because often what happens, you know, we start a project and then people start saying, what's that about? I didn't know that, anything about that. I didn't hear anything about that. When we have a Facebook page, we're always, you know, broadcasting what we're doing. So if you didn't hear about it, you weren't listening. That's essentially my
sometimes
answer
it's connecting,
to that.
It, sometimes you have to connect with people on the level you need to connect them with. So a passing recognition that something's there.
Yeah.
How do you engage and draw people in? And also, you need another generation that have a sense of ownership and pride, which can often be the difficult thing. Lots can happen in schools, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, well, the seminar that we had, I went to the two primary schools because it was too late to involve the two secondary schools, and the primary school children I spoke to asked them to draw their interpretation of what a monastery would have looked here.
Yeah, I saw that,
So they did a great... So that's sort of starting them off on a little journey that they'll evolve into a different level by the time they're teenagers. And a lot of them, you know, have then got an appreciation that they live in a historic town.
But even like some transition year projects coming through here and stuff
That's what I know you're going to be talking to Howard Welsh from the Royal School shortly. So he, you know, he's been great, as has the Dean of College in helping us out with those kind of projects.
I mean, these buildings are astonishing. Like, if walls could talk, the amount of history here, the tears, the laughter. Yeah. I don't know what room we're in now. Maybe was it a dining room or a front room or a reception room? But kids, you know, long gone now from 200 or 300 years ago, running around in here, and the floorboards banging and
Well, my mother
people shouting up and down the stairs. You know what I mean? It's just dripping
in
memory and history.
Well, we have a lot of the buildings here are on this side of the Diamond Dyer, actually nearly all listed.
Yeah.
And my mother grew up in a little cottage up Irish Street, which I can almost see from here. And she remembers the She said she was like Mrs. Bridges from Downton or upstairs, downstairs. This lady who was the maid here, and she wore black, all black, and then her white apron and her white hat. Yeah. So my mother remembers that. So yes, the history is.
I mean, you can just see that her standing on the front doorstep.
Yeah,
in the
going up to get milk.
Something.
I think it was, and I remember the pump and the, you know, where people got their water from the town pump in the middle of the Diamond. But we're, you know, there isn't an event which I should flag up because we're trying our best to get all of the groups in the town together. This is DLDC are working along with us to help with this. We had an event last year called A Celebration of Community. So this year we're going to have a celebration of Samhain, and Samhain being Halloween in the modern word, and it would have evolved from the place like Beltany Stone Circle. So we are asking the community groups to all come together on that day, I think it's the 4th of October, and to dress up in a fancy dress, because Halloween was all about the spookiness and when the living and the dead passed easily through each other. So hopefully all, and we have another meeting, I think, on the 24th of August for people to understand what's going on. But, you know, so again, all of the groups, I'm now saying to all of the groups, this is happening.
Okay,
and if you want to be involved, get in touch with us.
All right. And I'm sure me and you'll speak about that between now and then.
We certainly will. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Listen.
And I should add as well, you're saying about flagging everything up. As you probably know, I do work with Nationwide, RT Nationwide.
Mm-hmm,
so we're going to be doing a piece about the two heritage, there are five heritage towns in Donegal. So we've picked two of them, which is Raphoe and Remelton. So we'll be doing that shortly. We'll be filming what is being done for heritage. And
what are the other heritage towns? Am I putting you on the spot there?
Not really. I think Ballyshannon is the other one.
Okay, which makes sense.
Yeah,
one of the oldest
Mulville
towns
is the other one.
Okay. Ardrah, no?
Could be our draw. I'm not sure what the fifth one is.
I'm just curious as to. No, it does make Ballyshannon and Remelton here. Does the other two? I'd be, you know, be interested.
Yeah, and they're designated by Donegal County Council as heritage towns. No, that doesn't bring any money.
No, it's just I just find it interesting.
Yeah.
What are they? Come on, you can speak. So it's Ardra. Oh, yes,
it is.
Right.
There you are. Okay.
Yeah. Ardra, Ballyshannon, Mulville.
Yeah.
We got one each, and then Remelton and Raphoe.
Yeah.
Oh, I've clicked clicked into your search history, Mark. That's disgusting. That is disgusting. Where's the local church? On a joke. Listen, Mary Hart, lovely to see you.
And you. Good to see you in person.
Sure exactly. I'm not sure if we'll chat again between now and 12, because we're going to be speaking very shortly now to Dr. Howard Welch. Looking very much forward to that. It's great to be here, Mary. Thank you so very
You're very welcome, indeed. Yeah.
And well done for what you and the other directors and the community as a whole do, saving this building, saving it not just for this generation but future, for future generations. And the will is there for young people to engage and get in here and make it their own. It just takes those young people to see that, or their parents to encourage them, because it's all here, folks, and it's thanks to the likes of Mary and others who have so much pride in this beautiful part of the world. We are broadcasting live here from the Vault House in the heart of beautiful historic Rafaux, the smallest cathedral city in Europe. And we've got loads of more conversation, coming up, and some live music. And we're also going to be launching a quite exciting cash draw. Sean Quinn will be joining us for that. Okay, let's take a break, though, in the meantime. Welcome back to the Vault House in Rafaux, broadcasting the 9 till noon show live from here this week. And we'll be in different locations throughout the course of August each Friday. Of course, we were in Dunloe last week, Rafaux this week. And Caroline, where are we going next week? Do we know?
In-house.
Oh, we're not going out next week, right? So I've just been flagging that all morning and you never told me. That's perfectly fine. We're going to be broadcasting next week, next Friday, from the beautiful city of Letterkenny. So we don't do that too often. Okay, I'm joined in our studio here by Dr. Howard Welch, Principal of the Royal and Prior Comprehensive School. Thank you very much for calling in and chatting to us, and thanks for hosting us here in your beautiful cathedral city.
You're extremely welcome, Greg.
It's like everything, isn't it, around here, it seems. The Royal and Prior Comprehensive School is incredibly historic.
It is indeed an extremely historic institution. We trace our history back to the plantation, back to the early 17th century, when, as part of the plantation, various areas were deemed needing of education for schools, and ourselves, along with Dungannon, Armagh, Cavan and Enniskillen, all received kind of the foundation of an Ulster Royal School. And we trace our origins back to that, to 1608. And the first headmaster, Reverend Brian Morrison, arrived in Rafaux in 1618.
Why the gap between sort of this initiative and, I suppose, Rafaux getting off the ground?
I suppose the gap was, that it was difficult times. You know, they were establishing the plantation, and it was the logistically a challenge. In fact, the school was originally founded in Loch Esk, which is, you know, close to Donegal Town there, and then eventually moved back to the Dawson Centre. In fact, most of the Royal School started off in the extremities of the county, but then retreated back to the sort of the county town.
And it is the oldest school in Donegal.
It is the oldest school in Donegal, it is.
And why the longevity? Because it's still, it's also not only in Donegal, but one of the oldest in Ireland. How has it managed to persist over the centuries?
I think probably the fact that it had royal patronage, that it was established by the Crown, and that it had a charter, that would be a very good plan, foundation plank to have. Its connection to the Church of Ireland, which is like another pillar, and also it would have had connections with Trinity College as well. So there's a couple of features there which would continue to sort of support it. And obviously the Protestant community within Donegal, as within the county as well, would have been in need of education as well, and that would have also provided a healthy part of its longevity. But you're right to point that out. You know, there would have been hundreds of endowed schools right across Ireland, and very few of them survive. So we are very fortunate.
Obviously established as one of the royal schools of Ulster, and it still retains royal in its title.
Yes.
Is there any significance to that beyond just the title at this stage?
Yes, but well, in say the...
That's probably a wrong way of putting it, not significance. It is, of course, of significance, but beyond that, does it mean anything else?
It does. 2008, there was a great celebration of the 400th anniversary of the foundation of Ulster Royal Schools, and that provided an opportunity for all the schools to come together. A history was published, and various sporting and cultural aspects were put forward, and a kind of a charter was put together to sort of recommit ourselves to connecting together. So I would meet regularly with the other royal school heads, and we have a great relationship between us and run debating competitions and the like.
And is there a difference in ethos from this to another secondary school in the county, for an example?
Yeah, I suppose this school would have a very clear Christian foundation. You know, that we are, we have a patron body who are called the Donegal Protestant Board of Education. So they represent all the strands of Protestant faith or Reformed faith within the county.
And I suppose that makes it all the more attractive because, you know, I think sometimes this world is accelerating at a pace that the people necessarily aren't aware of or don't want. Mm-hmm. We've seen that, and now we're seeing a bit of a regress in different in different spaces. Yes. Has that sort of made a school with a very clear religious ethos even more attractive?
I think so. I think it's very clear in terms of what we believe and our foundations and how we see ourselves going forward. We have a chaplain as well in the school, which is an unusual feature that, you know, we have somebody who assists the school in leading us spiritually and connecting with the Protestant community. But it's not exclusive in terms of that we're a school that has that foundation, but we're open and you know, we're an interdenominational school and have connections right across the county in all faiths and those of none.
And what percentage, not percentage, because I'm not looking for specifics, but I mean, it's still a boarding school effectively, right?
It is.
So are many of your students boarders?
Yes, we have, I suppose percentage-wise it would be a small enough percentage. We have about 35 to 40 boarders would be part of the school.
That's not insignificant, is it?
No, it's not.
And would they tend to be from outside of the county or not exclusively? Or
no, we have a sort of a group who would be from Donegal, and we have students from right up in Ashowan, Dunfanaghy, and then around to Ardra, Brucklass, Mount Charles, down to Ballyshannon. So we have a real spread
all
across.
Over the place. And what would the advantage be to that? Is it more sort of immersive education experience? Is that why someone might choose that? How can we speak to everybody's motivation? But I'm just curious in this day and age as to why.
Yeah, I suppose there's a range of reasons. I suppose sometimes just in terms of parents wanting to choose a school of their ethos, of their choice.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And then obviously that we provide a really homely environment. It's a very special place, I must say, where students can come and have that home from home experience. I suppose a lot of people would had understandings of what boarding schools are like. You know, it's informed by a lot of culture, but that's not the same as it is now. You know, we have really looking after students' needs and try to ensure that their experience, you know, you develop a lot of talent, you know, abilities, independent learning. You know, there's a lot of, you know, you develop very quickly in a boarding society or a boarding environment. And there's a, you know, we have a very experienced and supportive staff.
It's whatever suits individuals. That's my view anyway. You talked about some notable, your output, notable past students, Josh and Chloe McGee. They attended the school. They're, I mean, international. Famous as badminton players, of course. Conall Dunn's a well-known accountancy firm in the town. He also played for Donegal. Ricky Sims is the manager of Usain Bolt. He runs a sport agency and quite famously, randomly actually, during an interview on the Saturday Sport or something, it just so happened that I think Usain Bolt was beside him, or he arranged an interview with Usain Bolt, which was kind of a fun moment. And Isaac Butt as well.
Yes.
Not a bad little... there's more than that. That's just page one.
Yeah, indeed. No, we've had a lot of very very well-known past students. At the present time, James Corrie, a former student, played hockey for Ireland. Luke Witherow is continuing that tradition, playing hockey for Ireland. The McGees there, you've got Sam, Josh, Dana, Chloe, and of course Rachel Dara as well is continuing that tradition. And we also have some of my fine athletes as well. I've got a young lady, Elsa Murs, about to head off to America on a full scholarship for her athletics.
And of course, lots of people whose names aren't necessarily in the public domain that are very successful ploughing their own path. Listen, it's been great. It's been great learning a bit. Thank you. I appreciate you calling into us. Unless there's anything you want to add, Howard?
No, I suppose just to back up what Mary was saying, just the historic nature of this town. The boarding house is separate to the school and provides that sort of element of history in the town, along with the cathedral, the bishop's, the castle, the vault house here, the diamond, Oakfield. All those things come together to bring a very rich history environment. And also to say that, you know, we're also interested in our current current students, but we're also, we've got a very active past students as well, and they're always very keen for people to contact them and to involve themselves in their work as well.
All right, and it's a great opportunity to celebrate, you know, who we are in all the different areas that we live and the way we live our lives and what have you. Listen, thank you so very much, Dr. Howard Welsh. It's been lovely having you in studio with us. He is principal of the Royal and Prior Comprehensive School. Good morning to Carmel Calderbanks, watching in New York, but originally in Rafo. Carmel, isn't that the wonderful thing about us streaming on social media as well, that you're able to see a program coming from your hometown? Charlotte is watching as well, as is Hillary. Darren's on with us as well. Darren, I do appreciate your comments. I can't always get to them all, but they're all read, as you can imagine. And we have Yvonne, Kathy, Audrey, and Gilbert with us as well. We are broadcasting live. Gilbert's watching from Knoxville, Tennessee, USA. Great to have you on board. Okay, we're broadcasting live from the Vault House here in Rafo. We are out and about today, and we've got loads of more guests and more conversation about Rafo, its history in the general area. It's not just its history too, it's vibrant future that people are very much working on. But let's take a break, and as I say, we'll be right back. Three guests in studio with me. I'll say good morning first to Jerry Keaveney, who's a coach at Rafo Boxing Club. Good morning to you.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm doing good, what about you?
Oh, not so bad, mate.
Right, you've been with the club now for over a decade.
Yeah.
All right, okay. And you've always had an interest in boxing yourself, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Amateur?
Yeah.
Did you ever...
Oh, yeah,
boxer. Did you ever cross over?
No.
Okay.
No interest in that.
All right, okay. So your teenage years was all about boxing, so you got the benefits of it,
yeah.
You understood the benefit. What was it for you that drew you in?
I think, you know... Basically, the discipline of it all, you know, going to different shows, getting away. I was in America boxing at a young age, 14 years of age, going to America, over in England, Scotland, and stuff like that there, you know. It was just a brilliant... I loved it anyway. I loved loved everything about it. Like, you know, the training was always the toughest part, but, you know, making weight and everything, but the boxing end was...
Yeah, I think that actually is not often discussed, particularly with young people, because we associate cutting weight maybe with the pro game and what have you, but you have to be really conscious of your weight, even in the younger categories.
Yes, everything is about weight. You know, at a young age, these young boxers are going in and they're boxing people their own age, their own weight. You know, you could go a weight above and maybe... box somebody who's maybe a foot taller, if you know what I mean. You know, there's fine lines in it, you know, so weight is a massive aspect for young ones, like, you know.
Yeah, they say a good biggin will always be a good little. And why has Rafo Boxing Club been so successful in terms of its output of successful boxers?
I think, you know, generally it boils down to who was there before us guys, myself and Gary McCullough and Jerry McGrannan. You had Tommy Stewart, who was there for years, Brendan Ryan, God rest him, and then, of course, Mr. Boxing, Peter O'Donnell. Without Peter, we wouldn't have a club, like, you know. Mm. He's just a ray of sunshine all the time in the club.
I know down in Donegal Town too, it's the same. There were guys that, you know, they were busy and older where they could maybe be relaxing a bit, but they still went, open the gym, get people in, put the arm around people if they need it, get them encouraged.
Well, that's it. It's about the young ones at the end of the day. Like, and before we try to make a good, you know, environment for the kids, like, you know, having a bit of crack, a bit of banter and everything, you know, but be serious when we have to be serious, when there's championships, when there's stuff like that, when there's weight to be cut and all. You know, for the young ones, it's sometimes it can be very hard. You know, you don't know what they're coming from. You don't know their backgrounds, you know. We get to know them personally on a one-to-one basis, and everybody's different.
See, I think we do, when we're younger, we do like discipline.
Yeah.
Structure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we like a sense of belonging. Yeah. And I think boxing's really, really good in that regard. And you've had Cathal McLaughlin, Danny Duffy, both won senior titles, Leah Gallen, five Irish titles. She also won two bronzes in the European Championship. Peter Park won three Irish titles.
Taylor Park, sorry,
beg your pardon. That's my mistake there. Well, it's not my mistake, but I'll take it. But then you'll see it in cycles, I presume. You know, I presume when the likes of, you know, Katie Taylor was coming on the scene, more girls might turn up.
Yeah.
You know, when you see maybe Jason Quigley fighting for a world title, you know, more lads might turn up. It's astonishing how, you know, people see their idols. That's why it's important. You can be what you see, effectively.
Yes. You know, we have Jason, for example, down in the gym training. When he was training for a world title and stuff, young kids were amazed seeing this guy in the gym, you know. Yeah. But he was the exact same as everybody
You're
else.
You're standing
hitting
the same bag as someone who's about to headline DAZN.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Where else do you get it? Yeah.
You know, and it gives what it does, and not just Jason, the likes of Cahill and these guys that are winning titles, you know, and Danny Duffy, Leah Gall, exceptional talent at boxing, like, you know. All our boxers are looking up to these people and going, you know, if they can do it, yeah, I can do it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and
you just have to put work
but in. It's about commitment. Yeah. It's yeah. about putting it in and everything else, you know, putting in the effort, you know. It's, we have only 4.5 hours every week with the boxers, you know, so there's a lot of time in between that for them to do their own
but
things, you know.
It's the output considering yeah. the time. Yeah. Brilliant stuff. Ivor Goodies, Secretary for Full Town Football Club. Ivor, thanks for joining us.
No bother, Greg. How's it going?
I'm good too. You've also been at it for 10 years now. Coaching, do you enjoy that? I would imagine you get a lot back from that, not least like trainer, the trainers, people training people in boxing, in football as well.
Yeah, it's a bit like what Jerry was saying. I mean, they come into you about when we cater for ages 6 up to nearly 60. You know, we have people playing all age groups. We've senior men, senior ladies, and then we've walking football as well. So you have all age groups, but they come into you very young, and maybe they move on later on in life, but you're kind of watching them grow as people as well as players.
Is it particularly special to have a senior ladies team, considering you're drawing from the local area?
Yeah, we've done a lot of work. I mean,
it's impressive.
Sinead,
like,
yeah, Sinead and Liam have done a lot of work in that area, you know, building the foundations. And then we got a bit of a spurt with the national Irish team doing so well in the World Cup. We got a lot of girls coming into the club. They've continued to grow that. We've utilised FAI programmes to help grow the interest in the girls as well. As we have over maybe 100 female members in the club, which is quite substantial.
And, you know, because we're a small county and a small country, sorry, relatively speaking, you know, we were talking about this earlier on as they were sort of establishing a senior rugby team for ladies in Letterkenny, but just for ladies and boys. I mean, there is a pathway there. I mean, if you're good enough and you put your head down,
you can see
how you can advance.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Tyler Toland would be a great example. You know, she was from St. Johnson. Came to our club as a young girl, spent many years there, went on to play for Blackburn Rovers, Celtic, Manchester City. Now he's a full-time career in the UK. And on the other side, you have, you know, just up the road here, Conor McGranahan's just signed for the Finn Harps men's team. Again, was with us up until a young teenager, joined the academy and took it from there. And
right.
We have other players going through the same pathway with Finn Harps at the moment.
Hold your thoughts there. I'm going to take the 11 o'clock news after a break. And I also have Jeffrey Devaney, who I want to speak to, but I don't want to rush you guys. So just stay where you are. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with the news.